Today we are going to hear from Uni Alsacker, who I'm very glad to have here, presenting on gratitude as a spiritual practice. It is easy to be grateful during trouble-free times, but how do we sustain a grateful orientation during challenging times? And how does being grateful impact our spiritual life? This talk will explore these questions as well as the connection between gratitude and happiness, and ideas on how to start or sustain a practice in gratitude will be shared. Uni calls both the bluffs of Winona and the prairies of South Dakota home. She loves to wander outside, read, play games, and be family and friends. She has worked as a college mental health counselor for the past 23 years, which I, teaching there, so thank her for doing. I have sent so many people their way. She is a seminary dropout, and she has belonged to the UU Fellowship for many years. Welcome, Uni. We're glad you're here.
Meister Eckhart wrote, "If the only prayer you say your entire life is thank you, that would suffice." And a reading from Psalm 118. "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." We are living during a challenging time. Every generation has their variation on this theme, I suppose. It seems bigger now. What we know for sure is that this is our moment in history. I suspect that each of us has wrestled with what to do. Am I doing enough? What difference can I make? Some of us are writing or becoming more active in politics, giving money, speaking out, praying. Sometime last winter, Steve and I were sitting at our kitchen table, stunned by the cruelty and hatred that seemed to be driving the direction of our country. Steve said, "Who would have thought that kindness is an act of resistance?" One thing that I have noticed is that much of this recent orientation seems to rest on the mindset of scarcity. There is not enough. I must protect my own. If you get your fair share, I get less. It feeds on fear. Fear of other, fear of running out, fear of being vulnerable. Perhaps choosing a mindset of abundance or a mindset of gratitude can also be a form of resistance, a protest to the daily gut punches. If that doesn't work for you, then I believe that it can at least serve as a platform on which to stand as we work for and wait for the winds of change to shift. Gratitude grounds us in enough. Gratitude is an age-old virtue. Cicero called it the parent of all virtues. But research into the impact of practicing gratitude is only about 25 years old. Robert Emmons and his crew from UC Davis noted that most of the psychological research up to that point was done on people struggling with negative emotions. They began to ask, what about the positive emotions? What makes people resilient? What happens when people practice gratitude? By now, there have been thousands of studies that have duplicated the same results. People who practice some form of gratitude tend to have more positive mental health. In looking at MRIs, they see that gratitude activates the part of our brain associated with emotional well-being and a sense of calm. Rates of anxiety and depression are lower after starting a practice of gratitude. It appears to strengthen bonds and deepen relationships when people are aware of and voice their gratitude to each other. Stress levels decrease as we change our focus from what is stressful to what elicits gratitude. People sleep better when they focus on gratitude and not fears when they go to bed. Maya Angelou writes, "Let gratitude be the pillow upon which you kneel to say your nightly prayer." Overall, people who are oriented towards gratitude tend to be happier. Brother David Steindl-Rost spoke often about the connection between gratitude and happiness. But as he stressed, it does not run in the direction we might think. Happiness does not make us grateful. Gratitude makes us happy. He discovered that anyone he met who was joyful was also practicing gratitude. He did not speak of a shallow, easy gratitude for one situation here or one situation there, but of a chosen stance on life that he worked on every single day. He called this lens grateful living. Grateful living is an orientation to the world that is not dependent upon the situation. Steindl-Rast did not have it easy. He was an Austrian teen when his country was taken over by Hitler and the Nazis. Death was before their eyes at all times. Tomorrow was not assured. Amidst such fear, destruction, and fracture, he did not have the luxury of sustained abundance and security. So he learned to look for opportunities to be grateful in the moment. What could he trust? Who did he love? Where was beauty found? What was still good? His gratitude was a decision, and he practiced it daily. In talking about gratitude, we cannot skirt the harder issue of adversity. Sure, it is easy to be grateful for times of plenty and peace, but what about those times of loss, fear, trauma? Yet Steindl-Rast and others insist that true gratitude is born of sorrow as much as of joy. President Lincoln understood this and set aside a day of giving thanks during another very dark time in our country. We probably all can remember an example of a time when we were struggling and someone offered up a platitude, "Just look at all you have to be thankful for," or "Just count your blessings." That buck up and notice that the glass is not entirely empty philosophy given by often overly cheerful people is not usually helpful and can feel insensitive and hurtful. When heartache hits, as it will again and again, non-binary thinking is essential. We can stand on that foundation of grateful living without being thankful for the adversity itself. I do not have to be grateful for the hardship to be aware of and thankful for what got me through. Who brought the food? What beliefs kept me from going under? What strengths did I lean into? Who could I call at 2 a.m. when I needed a lifeline? Who is in my pit crew, as Anne Lamott calls them? I suspect I'm not the only one here who can, after the fact anyway, say that the times in my life that have been the hardest are also the times when I've been the most grateful. I cannot choose the sorrow I experience in life, but I can choose my stance and how I move through it. Seen this way, grateful living is a spiritual practice. The word itself is not part of the UU principles, but it feels woven throughout, particularly in the seventh principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. People who live gratefully do not see themselves as solely responsible for the good in their lives or as living independently. Seeing with grateful eyes requires we see this web of interconnection. Gratitude allows us to connect with something greater than ourselves: God, nature, family, community. Most people who speak about gratitude use the language of practice of gratitude. It is not necessarily something that comes naturally. Rather, it is something we cultivate, grow, hone. The thoughts and actions we practice become who we are. Or, as Annie Dillard so simply and exquisitely put it, how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. I am mostly preaching to the choir here and could learn a lot about your practices that lead to the lens of gratitude, but I want to offer a few thoughts on either ways to start or things to add to your current repertoire. We move in the direction of our thoughts. If I sit with my fears and complaints, then I will become a fearful and angry person. William James knew that. And he said, human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes of mind. I'm a big fan of setting an intention. What might an intention around gratitude be? Perhaps something like, I will notice the good today, or I will lean into beauty, or something as straightforward as, I am becoming more grateful. I know I've talked about this here before, but I like the idea of putting bookends on the day, starting the day by remembering my intention, and then listing the good or the beauty at the end of the day. This is a way to train our minds, to strengthen that muscle, to be on the lookout for abundance. And with practice, these orientations become habits. Many people use gratitude journals. It can be as simple as a bulleted list of three things a day which you are thankful for, even if it's the same three things every day. Express it. Say it out loud. Say thank you at least once a day to someone. Say it often to the people you live with who do the same thankless jobs day in and day out. Thank you, Steve, for cleaning Sophie's letterbox. Write it. A thank you note goes a long way. I have a few that I've saved over the years. Set out visual reminders, photos, gifts, books, objects from your walks. I don't know how many piles of rocks I dust around in my house. Notice and comment on the little things. Thank your checkout person, the person holding the door. Develop a ritual. Hold hands before a meal. Go around and state something you are grateful for. Intentionally talk about it. I remember Vince Hatt sharing the ritual that he and his wife had, where once a week they would go out for a meal and talk about how they experienced God that week. And isn't that the same thing as sharing what we are grateful for? What if we met and shared what fed our souls? We get together to rage against the intentional hurt in the world. What if we got together and shared what holds us up? Make a list of the benefits in your life and ask, to what extent do I take these things for granted? I have to admit, sorry family, that one of my favorite things about camping is that when I get back home, I can turn on the faucet and not only do I have running water, but it is warm. We forget to be grateful for the basics. 783 million people in the world do not have access to clean water, and more than twice that many do not have access to adequate sanitation. Consider how a situation could have been worse. Anne Lamott, in her book, Thanks, Help, Wow, The Three Essential Prayers, notes that she often says, well, that could have been worse. It is not a bad idea to consider how things could have been worse, as long as we then shift our attention back to what we do have. Reflect on our mortality. We are all going to die someday. How does that knowledge impact how I live? When we are about to spend time with someone, consider the best qualities of this person. What are you grateful for in them? This sort of reflection sets a tone for when we are together, and it can be particularly helpful with the more challenging people in our lives. When we orient ourselves to what is positive about another person, we are more likely to speak it out loud to them, and there is a positive upward spiral. The method that David Steindl Ross teaches to develop the muscle of gratitude is stop, look, go. It is reminiscent of learning to cross the street as a child. First we stop, then we look, then we go. We live in a busy culture. We rush from one thing to the next, and it is easy to lose gratitude in that hustle. but we can build in stop signs. We can stop and focus on our senses. Anyone who has studied meditation knows the benefit of calming our bodies and slowing our breath. Calming the stress-oriented brain and orienting to the present moment activates the parasympathetic nervous system. After we stop and calm our bodies and minds, we can tune in. What do I hear, see, feel? Am I eating? How does this taste? Eckhart Tolle says, when you go deeply into the present, gratitude arises spontaneously, even if it is just gratitude for breathing. We cannot talk about gratitude without talking about being present. It is not naive or simplistic to be grateful during these days. It is essential. It is a healing and hopeful stance. It reminds us that darkness is not all there is, and it is not the end. There is always some sort of light coming through. Gratitude says, I will not give you my joy or all my attention. Life is good. Life is sacred. We are connected. We are called to be here for one another. There is beauty all around. We will notice it. We will celebrate it. We will honor it. May we dare to be grateful. Our work, as Mary Oliver points out, is to love the world. Anne Lamott says that poetry is the official language of wow. So I'd like to end with a couple poems. The first is by Rosemary Wattola Tromer and is called Sacred Pause. Only when I stop hiking do I finally see the flowers of the wild blueberries. First one, then five, then they are everywhere, everywhere. How did I miss all those tiny pink bells that will soon become dark, sweet fruit? How often in my haste do I miss what is right here, the thing I most long to see? Once I start seeing the blueberry flowers, I can't stop seeing them. Sometimes it's like that with kindness, with peace, with beauty, with love. And then a familiar poem by Mary Oliver, Mindful. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these? The untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of grass.
Is that time?